In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
This is the I Spy Radio Show.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny.
Keeping an eye on big government.
We the people tell the government what to do. It doesn't tell us.
The trouble with our liberal friends is not that they're ignorant. It's just that they know so much that isn't so.
And now, here is your host, Mark Anderson.
And welcome. This is the I Spy Radio Show, kicking off a brand new year. And if how it started is any indication, 2026 is going to be an incredible year. Mostly because I'm looking forward to Democrats to continue to choose the wrong side of practically every issue. I'm looking forward to Democrats trying to explain how their side has successfully defrauded taxpayers of billions of dollars, and not just tens of billions, but the current speculation is several hundreds of billions. The Democrats have really painted themselves into an awkward corner here. Now, you would not know that listening to the mainstream media, and in some cases, you wouldn't know it even listening to some conservative media either. The mainstream media wants you to think that the Democrats are more powerful and more popular than ever. Some Republican-leaning media are afraid of that same thing, that the Democrats are powerful and popular. Well, it's easy to project that kind of image and to fool people when you have billions of dollars in your marketing budget. And they do, courtesy of taxpayers. But the Democrats have really painted themselves into an awkward corner because just as a very important midterm election is coming up, so much of their funding for marketing and politicking depends on fraud. And that fraud is now being exposed right in the middle of a midterm election. And what you're going to see in 2026, not just Democrats being exposed in blue states, you'll see them being exposed in red states as well. They are so skilled at manipulation and image projection that they managed to steal money right out from under the noses of Republican-controlled states. The backlash against Democrats could not just impact blue states, but increase Republican leads in red states as well. All I can say is, for 2026, make sure you have plenty of popcorn at home as all of this unfolds. It is a brand new year, and to get us started here, we're going to talk with Chuck Weiss. Chuck, it is great to have you back on.
Glad to be here, Mark, and Happy New Year to you and all the listeners.
Happy New Year to you, and we're expecting great things in 2026, despite Republicans in 2025 were saying, well, gosh, we might lose the midterms and stuff. I don't buy it. I think looking ahead to 2026 is going to be a great year for Republicans, and I think in large part that's going to be because of the Trump effect on the economy, and we'll probably touch on some of that today, but I think on today's show, this is just going to be kind of a free-flowing conversation. We're just going to go where things take us. And I'd like to actually start with looking back at 2025 and just get your take on some of the really big stories that you saw in 2025.
Well, the biggest one was when Trump initiated all the tariffs on the world's economy to straighten out the huge trade deficit problem that we had. And that was big news because it sent markets temporarily into a turmoil. There was a lot of hand-wringing, as you remember, from Democrats saying, you can't do this. It's unlawful. There were lawsuits that sprung up out of it trying to stop Trump from doing it. But in essence, as we rolled forward in time, what we discovered and found out was Trump wasn't doing this to deliberately hurt anybody. He had to even the score because the hard realization of all of that and the reason why he did it is the country was going broke. We were $34 trillion. We are $34 trillion, or at least at the time this started, in debt. And the huge trade deficits were just mounting, surmounting that every single year. And everybody knew, looking at it on paper, it's unsustainable. You can't keep doing this, or there'll come a time that the dollar will collapse and you'll go into a hyperinflation mode of some sort. So this headed all that off in spite of all the hand-wringing by Democrats and the claims that it was all wrong, but it had to be done. We had to do something to arrest the massive deficit spending. And when the tariffs brought in revenue to do that, it has helped enormously to begin to straighten things out. And that's just the beginning, I think, of the Trump economic plan to turn everything around and get us back where we should have been years ago. But we're derailed by a lot of these Democrats' policies economically.
Well, I think for me, probably the biggest story of the year was the One Big Beautiful Bill. I think we are only just starting to scratch the surface of that in terms of how well that's going to impact the economy. There's a lot of things that I think people aren't even aware of that they're just maybe now starting to find out. And one of the things that jumped out to me, and you know, I tend to research these kinds of things, One of the surprises to me was that the changes to the withholding tables were actually retroactive to the start of 2025. They didn't kick in when the bill was passed. They went all the way back to the start of 2025. And so everybody that was never changed their withholding tables, well, guess what? They're going to be in for a huge surprise come tax day when they get a much bigger refund than they were expecting. And so there's a lot of different gems in that bill, some of which we'll talk about to you today, because I think it's going to have some big impacts in terms of what Oregon is looking at doing. And then we're going to be talking about that in a few weeks here when we have Jonathan Williams from American Legislative Exchange Council back on. One of the other things that I think kind of jumped out at me over the year was when you look back, and it wasn't really a story per se, it's just kind of an observation. It was astounding to me how on pretty much every single political issue, the Democrats got on the wrong side of it. It didn't seem to matter. It didn't seem to matter whether it's immigration. It didn't seem to matter whether taxes and tax cuts and Obamacare subsidies, all these other things. They were on the wrong side of every flipping issue.
Well, that doesn't surprise me because, in my opinion, and I think I've stated it before, the party of Democrats are not the party of Democrats 30, 40, 50 years ago. The party has morphed itself into just downright Marxist socialist type Democrats. And of course, they're always going to be on the wrong side of an economic issue if that's where their perspective is coming from, because we are a capitalist country. And they are anti-capitalists. They want to destroy the capitalist system and build it or rebuild it in the eyes of Marxism. And so, of course, they're going to be against everything Donald Trump is doing, because he's basically trying to restore that so that economic prosperity is reborn and occurring in this country like it should have been, as these other policies were fighting against it. So that doesn't really surprise me at all. And they are. They're on the wrong side of everything. Either because of that Marxist ideology, or some of them are just useful idiots to Marxists and they don't understand economics at all.
Yeah.
So they get emotional, and sure, they're going to jump on things, tax the rich. Look at all that money on that side of the fence. It's seen that they have this, and we got to take it away from them. That's kind of their mental perspective if they don't understand economics.
Yeah, I think what we're going to be seeing more and more of in 2026, and this is why I think it's going to be such a good year for Republicans, is so much of what the Democrats have been doing is just being exposed. And that kind of brings us to probably the biggest story at the end of the year, for sure, was the Somali fraud that's been uncovered, and that's going to roll into this next year. Looking back at that, from years ago, it never made sense to me with the Democrats, where they always had this big push to defund the police. You know, it started with the whole George Floyd thing, and even earlier than that, defund the police, and by extension, defund law enforcement. And now when you look at all of the fraud being exposed, getting rid of law enforcement and prosecutors, that makes a lot more sense now.
Well, I think you're absolutely right about that, Mark. And you go back to the George Floyd thing, those Minnesota police officers, Minneapolis police officers that were put on trial and convicted, this was all a political railing of them. And the charges, I mean, whatever wrongdoing you could have asserted that they did justly, was way over the top in what actually happened. And they ended up going to prison and serving long periods of time. And it was all a politically set up sort of thing. George Floyd wasn't strangled to death by any one of those police officers. He was high on drugs at the time. They were trying to take him down. And as he tried to wrestle with them and fight with them because he didn't want to go back to jail, the drugs in his system caused overload on his whole respiratory system, and he collapsed, basically. But it made it look like, or they made it look like in the videos, like, well, this police officer's knee is on his throat and he's choking him to death, which wasn't the case. He wasn't choked to death. He died of respiratory collapse, but it was all drug-induced. So I think there was a terrible injustice done on that one. But
well, I think when it comes to the Democrats, when so much of their money is happening through fraud, and it's not just the Somali fraud, and we'll touch about that in a little bit here, but when you've got so much fraud happening, of course you do not want law enforcement anywhere around you. All right, let's go ahead and take our break. Coming up, we'll continue our discussion with Chuck Weiss talking about what waits for the Democrats in 2026. And welcome back. This is the iSpy Radio Show, talking today to Chuck Weiss. We'd love to talk to Chuck because he's a great thinker. He's probably best known for his fierce debunking of global warming, and we'll probably come back around to that. In fact, I kind of know we will, because there's been some new news on that. But going on to that last segment, we were talking about the Somali fraud, and I'd like to touch on that. And a few weeks ago, when we had Ed Deal on, We talked about Somali fraud, and my take on this is when the left comes up with a scheme like the Somali fraud, like green energy, like global warming, they tend to replicate it. They do a great job implementing it. They work out the kinks. But then once they get that model, they use that and export it to other states and other areas. So I'm thinking if the Somali fraud is happening there in Minnesota, it's absolutely happening here. In fact, we're already seeing that in other states, in Ohio, Illinois is another one, California as well. So all of these things are being uncovered now. And I think what we're starting to see going into 2026 is the unveiling of the fraud industrial complex. And I think the more we look into this, the deeper it's going to get. In fact, on Thursday, Trump announced the creation of a new division within the Department of Justice dedicated to investigating and prosecuting fraud nationwide. So look out, 2026, Democrats.
Yes, that's good. That's a very good thing. I listened, Mark, to the show when you had Ed Deal on just last week. I think it aired twice. And I listened very intently to his uncovering the fact that Medicaid fraud was going on here in the state of Oregon. And an incident tipped him off to that, and he's tried to get the Democrat Party, and I'm not sure if the governor, but probably the governor, interested in looking into this. And his response that he got was just shocking to me. I guess I shouldn't say it's shocking, because it's just the way things have gone with that party. But his words, if I'm quoting him correctly, were, "I brought this up to them and they show absolutely zero interest in looking into what I've uncovered." Yeah. Now, that's astounding. Yeah. That's just astounding.
It really is. And I know that Ed has really just scratched the surface on that. And that's, you know, there have been a lot of different avenues as far as how these Somalis and other Democrat organizations are managing to bilk so much money from the federal and state governments. And it's with Medicaid, as you mentioned there, that was the big one in Minnesota with the Feeding Our Future. Those were COVID dollars designed to feed kids, and instead they were just pocketing the money. Also the Child Care Assistance Program, that's the newest one that's being tapped into there in Minnesota, where they've got all of these daycare centers and not a single child there. They also have been bilking money from the Temporary Assistance for Needy Families Program. So it's just on and on down the list. And it's not surprising, because when you've got trillions of dollars being spent at the national level and hundreds of billions more being spent at the state levels, all that money invites fraud, because bureaucrats can't or won't or simply don't track what happens to it once that money goes out the door. As it is, there is practically no focus on holding bureaucrats responsible or to follow up on things either. Their job is to get the money out the door, not ensure that it's being spent wisely. So it's not surprising that the Democrats have tapped into this. And also, when so much of their money is coming from fraud like this and from the federal government, it's no wonder they like to say that the government creates jobs. Well, there you go. We're seeing that in action here.
Yes, we are. And I've wondered myself how far beyond what Representative Deal has uncovered with Medicaid this source of fraud has going on in the state of Oregon. Because it's always upset me, and I've been on the show mainly to talk about climate-related issues, but the climate fraud that's going on in Oregon is just astounding. And Governor Kotek, over time, Brown may have been involved in it too, but they invented all these NGOs that were part of the climate protection program that she rammed through the taxpayers' throats without a vote on it. And money in NGOs was going out to help communities. And they actually use racism here, because they were saying communities of color and other minorities, their whole philosophy, the way they've written it up, was that the rich white man's SUVs and the emissions coming out of his tailpipe are causing dangerous climate change, and that's disproportionately hurting minorities and people of color that can't afford the same things the white man can, and so they deserve compensation to deal with that. And one of the things that they were doing was to give taxpayer-funded air conditioners to these low-income residences to escape summer heat. And then they were going to plant trees and do all these other sorts of things. Well, I never saw an accounting of the number of dollars that they were spending for this. And if I go back to my childhood in Portland, the climate hasn't really changed at all much since then. And we had heat waves all the time. And I grew up in a house that didn't have air conditioning. We had ways that we dealt with it. We had fans we could put on ourselves. We had swimming pools we could go to. There were all kinds of ways to deal with this. And to buy somebody an air conditioner was a luxury I didn't have back then. And I just think the whole thing is absurd today, unless you're of an elderly type where you may have a health condition that doesn't allow you to get exposed to any sort of heat, and you have no way of escaping it because you may be disabled.
Well,
but
that was their excuse too, is that, well, it's a health-related issue, because those monies weren't just coming from green energy programs. They were healthcare dollars. It was the Oregon Health Authority that was doing that, because they said, well, climate change is healthcare. And so by applying healthcare and climate change to things, you can call anything within the human existence is caused by climate change.
Yes, yes, you can. And the money that they spent on these air conditioners went far beyond just giving one to a disabled person. And I've always asked, how much money did you guys actually spend on this? How did the money flow out of state government into these local programs? And, of course, we don't get any answer for it. But this whole notion that human emissions of CO2 are changing the climate is absolutely absurd. There's no proof of this anywhere in the record. And I can throw this back in the face of anybody who argues it. And like I've explained to your listeners before, I was in the atmospheric science program at Oregon State University that invented the first climate model, and I was against all of it back then because we knew what the limitations of the models were, and you may not get any useful answers of anything from them. And back then, all the founding work was demonstrating that CO2 has no capability of changing the climate because of the Earth's hydrological cycle, or the water exchange between the surface and the atmosphere and the rainfall and clouds, all that sort of thing.
It wasn't useful in the sense, in terms of predicting the weather, those models weren't, but they were very useful in getting billions of dollars from the federal government. Okay, let's go and take a break. When we come back, we continue and talk about this fraud that's happening out there. Everyone stay with us. And welcome back. This is our first live show here on iSpy Radio for 2026, into our 16th year now we're starting. And we're kicking that off with Chuck Weiss, who is a very astute political activist now, I guess you could call him, but also we love the way that he thinks, especially in terms of debunking global warming and so much else when it comes to science. And so, Chuck, with your political involvement here recently, and you had mentioned something that I'd like to come back around to from that last segment with the NGOs, and the governor had started these things. I've done a little bit of investigating into the Somali fraud myself here in Oregon, but before I get into that, one of the latest scams that is now being uncovered in Minnesota is housing, where Somalis will buy homes in Minnesota to use as quote-unquote care homes, and they sit just as empty as the daycare centers have. Nobody's there, and yet they bill the state for millions of dollars. And so far, it's been rumored that 455 homes have been identified there in Minnesota. And so I've started to do a little bit of research here in Oregon, and what I did was I generated a list of the 100 most common surnames of Somali origin, and then I took those and I cross-referenced those in the Oregon's business directory. And within that, I haven't dug into it very deep. I haven't checked each one, so this is very surface level. But total businesses that had a Somali common surname, and of course, with a last name like Mohammed, it could be Somali, it could be Middle Eastern, it could be any number of things. So that's where this is very ballpark. But what it found was 549 businesses. And one of the things that I then cross-referenced that against was a business name that had the word care in it. Daycare, senior care, whatever. It found 63 of those. And so since 2024, when a lot of this fraud, I think, really started, or it started to pick up anyway, because it's been going on since 2018 there in Minnesota, but it seems to have really ramped up within the last 2 years. There have been 40 businesses started that have the name Care in it. And then just in 2025 alone, there were 28 businesses. And then I also did another search for transport, because that's another big thing. We've got illegals with driver's license. There was 30 of those businesses. And then surprisingly, there was also 39 nonprofit organizations. So out of 549, 39, that's 7% of businesses that have a surname common to Somalis are nonprofits. And so getting back to your notion of NGOs, as I was thinking about, so they've taken millions and literally tens of billions of dollars from the federal and state governments. What are they doing with that money? We know that some of it was ending up overseas, but how do they do it? I mean, is it just sitting there with millions of dollars in the bank account? Well, it was when I started looking into some of those nonprofit organizations, one of which has moved like 15 times since 2000. which is a little suspicious. But that's how they would do it, I would think, is when, if you've got these nonprofits, you can start dumping your profits into there, because what we've seen from the green energy, all of those dollars, that's the same thing they do, is they start dumping it into these nonprofits. And that's a real problem, because if you're laundering money, per se, or just moving money around, that is one way to do it, is you dump it into a nonprofit, and then it becomes very hard to track that thereafter because of all the privacy laws in terms of donors and how they then spend that money.
Yeah, if they can sublet or create smaller ones and then shift money around, they do that in such a way to where it takes some accounting expertise to be able to see exactly what's happening to the money. But you're right, that's how they can probably shield a lot of it and not get attention drawn to themselves by whatever federal banking regulations that there are in place. So I know those deals specifically in large cash transfers. I know if you try to deposit more than $10,000 cash in a bank, the last time I checked anyway, you're flagged immediately for suspicion of drug trafficking, because very few people deal in pure cash of those amounts or larger. So there are ways that they look into things, but then the NGO problem, it doesn't matter. Electronic transfers and sublet NGOs can move money around and make it difficult to find out exactly where it's going. And they might even be able to mask some of the names of these. Who knows?
Yeah.
I haven't looked into any of that specifically, but I can see if somebody had a crafty mind, how they could set all that up and make it difficult for the federal government or state government to track all the money.
Yeah. Well, like I said, I've only just started to look at that myself, and I would encourage other people to start looking for that. If you'd want that list of 100 common surnames, I'd be happy to send that to you. You can do your own investigations. The other thing with NGOs is, I don't think you had, we got talking before the show and you hadn't seen it, but Trump has withdrawn the U.S. from 66 international organizations. And some of these are rather interesting. There are a whole bunch of UN organizations. I think there are 27, if I remember right, out of these 66. That sounds about right. But anyway, some of the ones that may get your attention were the 24/7 Carbon Free Energy Compact, the Commission for Environmental Cooperation, there is a whole bunch of climate change ones. And one in particular probably gets your attention, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. We are now officially removed from that.
That's great. That is really good news. I had not heard that, Mark, and so you're breaking that bit of news to me for the first time today. But I've always thought, because of the politicalization of the IPCC, and I'm not bad-mouthing some of the reputable scientists that did work for it, but the ones who did the reputable work over time, and I'd seen this many times, had their work altered, deliberately changed. There were some of these scientists, Chris Lancey was one of them, who was a hurricane expert, who had his opinion on hurricanes related to climate change conclude that there was no real connection at all that he could see between hurricane intensity and the climate, and they took his work and distorted it and gave it an entirely different meaning or a political spin to give the IPCC what it wanted to solicit all these stupid rules that they come up with that they're trying to enforce on the whole world. And Lancey got so mad he resigned. There were other scientists that have resigned, and I've seen the resignation of some very qualified and well-spoken physicists do the same thing. So to have this happen, that's just wonderful. That's news. That is wonderful news. I'm glad that Donald Trump did this, because the IPCC has become a political body. It really always was. But the scientists who originally did the work were hoping that whatever they put into it would have some sort of a true scientific meaningful conclusion. And over time, we've seen that's just not the case. It turned into politics and a desire to control the global economy with all these horrendous regulations involved around controlling the flow of energy. And so it's glad. I hope that thing just dismantles itself somehow and no longer is able to function. It would do the world a big favor.
Well, for people who are not familiar with the IPCC, can you describe that in brief for them? Oh, you know what? Actually, let's hold off on that. Oh my gosh, we are way long in this segment. So everyone stay with us. We'll be right back with Chuck Weiss. And And welcome back. This is our first show for the year here on iSpy. We're into our 16th year now, and we're kicking things off with Chuck Weiss, a longtime guest and listener favorite. You know, in fact, we often get more comments and reactions about shows with Chuck than we do with some national guests. And so, Chuck, in going on that last segment there, I didn't realize we were running so long, but for those that missed that and are just joining us, Trump has pulled the U.S. from 66 international organizations, and one of the big ones in my mind is one that I don't think a lot of people know that much about, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, the IPCC. So for our listeners who don't quite understand the importance of that, what does the IPCC do besides collect and spend money?
Well, they're supposed to be giving a global assessment of how humans, through carbon dioxide emissions, may or may not be changing the climate. Actually, they've changed it to how we are changing the climate, because they went at the very beginning, they were a little more open-minded about it. And they said, we're kind of suspicious that human emissions of CO2 could be changing the climate. But over time, like I said, political bodies took this organization over, and anything that a reputable scientist gave them that they didn't like to fit a political narrative, they threw it out or changed it. And like I said, the scientists who had their work altered got so angry they quit in disgust. So over time, this has just become a huge political body where the narrative is that humans are causing the climate to change, which is not true to the extent these people say that it is. And they use this to say the entire world should be bound by some sort of a collaborative agreement to reduce emissions of CO2, and the most industrialized countries, like the United States, should be the ones that pay the biggest price because we are causing most of the damage to the climate. This is complete and utter nonsense. It is a lie, and it's been a lie from day one, but yet you still have politicians on the left in this country that are trying to get us into this world climate agreement, the Paris Accords, that Trump took us out of. And those accords were drafted through the IPCC. That's how all of this has worked. But it basically screwed the United States over because we are the biggest industrial emitter of carbon. And so we were the ones to pay the biggest price. And so everything was bound around making us reduce our emissions while third world nations rising up get to emit more. That's so ridiculous, because there's serious questions as to whether humans even control the total amount of CO2 in the atmosphere or which direction it's going. That's all climate related. But the IPCC is a political body. It is a very wise decision for President Trump to pull the plug on it.
Yes.
He needed to, because it's a waste of time and effort, and what these people do is destructive to our country, and we get nothing in return for it.
I tend to think of them as kind of the scientific propaganda arm for global warming. And, you know, they provided the scientific backbone on which they hung all of their marketing. And, you know, they provided the facade that any of it was related to science, kind of like what we saw in COVID. Is that, had to take the vaccines, and don't you dare question the science because it's science, and we say it's science because it's science.
Exactly.
That's their argument, and it's so circular. But, of course, that's the business of science, is to question science. But to speak against the IPCC, you may as well, I mean, it's heretical.
Yeah, that was the position that that all the Democrats in this country and their leadership took with respect to the IPCC. It was like, if you ever challenged any conclusions the IPCC came to, it is, how dare you? How dare you challenge the great and powerful Oz, which we infer is makes up the IPCC.
You know, you sounded a little bit like Greta Thunberg just then.
Yeah.
How dare you?
But that's exactly what they did. They pulled Greta Thunbergs on the public, or any part of the public that would ever challenge what the IPCC had to say. And they are nothing more than a stupid political body with objectives to control the flow of world resources and energy. They're basically a Marxist organization. Everything they do is about redistribution. And we get nothing for it. You're not going to solve any climate problem because there is no climate crisis, and you're not going to change the level of CO2 in the atmosphere. You're just not.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad to see us pull out of that. I'm not terribly surprised by it, because if you remember, it was in the spring of last year, 2025, when Trump made his big speech to the UN, basically said the whole green energy and climate change thing is a scam, and we need to get out of it. And so this is really the fulfillment of that. We pull out of those, and there's a whole bunch of these that are climate related, the International Energy Forum, Renewable Energy Agency, Solar Alliance, and on. I was wrong earlier when I said it was 27. There's actually 31 UN agencies and organizations that they have pulled out of, and then a whole bunch of these other ones that are not quite UN, but they are global in scale, at least international anyway. So I think that is going to be a large part of what we see from Trump in this next year as well, is continuing to dismantle the deep state. In fact, he's going over to Davos in, I think next month, maybe two, where he's going to be speaking to the World Economic Forum. And I have never looked forward to a speech in front of the World Economic Forum, but I'm imagining it's going to be just like his speech there at the UN, except on steroids.
Well, yeah, and I hope that it is. I hope that it is. We need to, and President Trump is just trying to bring us back to the semblance of the United States being a world leader economically and socially and everything else. And there's a lot of work to be done to try to turn this around, because before he became president, even in 2016, we were on this spiral downward economically and socially and morally in this country. There's just been so much deterioration because of policies created that encouraged all that. And he's just trying to turn it around in many different ways. But the first thing you have to do is solve the economic crisis that we were in, which he's doing. And the big, beautiful bill, as you said, when that takes effect this year, the ramifications of that economically will be wonderful to everybody in this country and to the economy and stock markets and everything else as a whole. So it's going to take time, but he's on the right path. And I'm just so glad that we have this man in office, because what was happening to this country up until the time he was able to obtain the political power he has was just demonstrable.
Yeah. Okay, let's go ahead and take a break there. Come back. We're going to start talking about the Democrats in 2026 and what fate awaits for them. We'll start with the national level, and then we'll drill down into the problem Oregon Democrats will be facing. Stay with us. And welcome back. We're talking today to Chuck Weiss. He's our go-to guy for when it comes to things like climate change and global warming. He's a trained scientist and meteorologist, and he's also become a bit of a political activist and a very great thinker. And I love to talk to him, kind of get an everyman sort of approach, because he's got his ear to the ground there. And so, Chuck, I'd like to start talking about the Democrats' prospects here in 2026. And I said it earlier, and I'll say it again, is I don't think the Democrats are going to do nearly as well as the pundits were saying going out of 2025, that there's some speculation that the Democrats may retake the House. I don't see that happening. I think, in fact, that the Republicans are likely to expand that. And one of the reasons why I say that is because of the impacts of the One Big Beautiful Bill. And just to touch on a couple of things, because, you know, when the One Big Beautiful Bill was passed, the Democrats were saying this does nothing but provide tax cuts for the wealthy. That, of course, is a flat-out lie. It kept the tax cuts in place that directly benefited the middle class and lower classes as well. I'd like to just touch on some of the things that we will be touching on in a future show, I think in 2 weeks, with Jonathan Williams from the American Legislative Exchange Council. And two things in particular are going to be are going to be impacting everyday Oregonians, not the uber wealthy. One of which is that the no tax on tips. And with this bill, service workers will now be able to deduct up to $25,000 of tip income annually. And that's that's on top of the expansion for the standard deduction. So right off the top, if you're getting tips, you can deduct up to $55,000 and change right from your tax bill before you pay any taxes. So if you're making under $55,000, you won't pay a dime in taxes. However, it is huge. And then also the other expansion is tax on overtime. And so if you're and that's $12,500 of overtime pay every year can be deducted. And so if you are a service worker who works overtime, that means you can deduct up to $37,500 if you get both tips and overtime. So with the standard deduction, you're talking about $67,000 that can be deducted right off the top before you pay any taxes. They've also expanded the definition of what a tipped worker is. Some of the ones that they've expanded into, the obvious ones like hospitality and food and beverage, restaurant workers, transportation, that's been expanded now for like Uber and shuttle people. They've expanded into delivery workers. So somebody that's out there doing DoorDash, that sort of thing. And then also home services, they've expanded that list. Even podcasters. If you've got a favorite podcast and you decide to, you know, I'll do hit somebody's tip jar for $10 or so, that podcaster can deduct that. And then they've also added a, and this is the other big one here too, for Oregonians over the age of 65, they've added an additional $6,000 standard deduction bonus for taxpayers over 65. And that means 88% of all seniors who receive Social Security will pay no taxes on those benefits. So just with those three things, I think that's going to have a huge impact here on Oregonians and the average voter out there. As long as Republicans can couch us in the way, hey, if Republicans lose in 2026, you could lose those tax benefits. And by then, people have already started to see those kicking in. So, but the interesting thing here in terms of Oregon is that Oregon right now is trying to decouple Oregon from those federal tax cuts. And Oregon is one of, I think, six states in total that automatically adjust whatever the feds do, whatever tax breaks you get on the federal level, they replicate that, they mirror that on the state level as well. However, Oregon Democrats are already considering introducing a special bill to decouple everyday Oregonians from getting those tax breaks. And if that happens, I think there will be hell to pay here in Oregon, because we saw it with the no gas tax.
Yes, I agree with everything that you're saying there, Mark. This is a good thing for everybody in the middle class, this big, beautiful bill. There'll be a lot of tax savings by the very things that you've outlined. So for the Democrats in this state to try to decouple those breaks and basically screw everybody over that could have gotten them, but through their legislative actions are being blocked, it should hurt them. And as far as the restaurant workers go, I don't know how it is around the rest of the state, because the local news here focuses on local news, but there has been a lot of restaurant closures in the city of Portland over the last couple of years. And the reason is because they can't deal with the high crime rates anymore. These shops that set up in places like downtown are not getting the foot traffic anymore to support their businesses because of the crime. People are scared to go down there. So some of them have already lost out and they've closed their doors. So if they decouple everything else, it should have a horrible impact for their ability to collect votes on the next set of elections that are going to take place in this state. But the other thing I worry about for Oregon, and not to discount anything that you're saying, but I've talked about it on your show before, voter fraud has always been at the top of my mind. Election integrity is at the top of my mind. And Oregon needs some serious reforms. We just need to get away from vote by mail. And until we do that, we're going to have a problem getting some of these rotten people reelected, regardless of what they do, because they cheat to get there. And we really need to fix that. Yeah. And
I think Trump is working on that, because he's got Harmeet Dillon and others that are looking into, you know, I think it's Harmeet. But anyway, he does have the attorneys generals and they are looking into those things here at the various states. I think 26 states have now been sued for not turning over their voter rolls. Oregon is certainly one of those. We've got the ongoing case here with Judicial Watch as well. So I think in terms of turning around the elections, that will also help. Because I think you'll get more honest ones as well. And we certainly saw that with Georgia. I'm sure you saw that, where they finally admitted that, oh, yes, there were some 300,000, I think, votes that were illegally counted.
Yes, exactly. So. And if they really looked into it in Oregon, they would find a lot more, too. All the legal action I was involved with to try to straighten that out has been very disappointing as far as the results from the court, because the courts don't want us to see anything. They basically shut everything down. And that's very unfortunate, and it's very unfair. Motivations behind it, I can't tell you, because I can't read the mind of these people. But I think their excuses for not letting us kick the tires and look under the hood were ridiculous.
Well, anytime they won't let you look, you can pretty much guarantee there's fraud happening, which is what they're trying to do there in Minnesota, is they're trying to block people from looking. And in fact, there's already been a bill introduced up in Washington to stop people from looking into Somali fraud up there as well. So that's a sure giveaway that you're part of the fraud when that's what you are doing, is not letting people look. All right, we will wrap things up with Chuck Weiss after this. And welcome back in our final segment now here on iSpy Radio. This is our first show for the year, and we've been talking with Chuck Weiss, and in that last segment, we were talking about the fortunes of Democrats, their prospects in 2026, and I think it's going to be bleak here for Democrats in Oregon. And not only are they trying to decouple the no tax on tips and no tax on overtime, and I assume also the $6,000 bonus for Social Security members as well, senior citizens anyway, there's another issue happening here because Trump is bringing back trillions of dollars into the U.S., all of these deals that he is bringing in, and that's one of the things that he's starting to do is now you're starting to see some of these plants and manufacturing sites being set up, and that is something else I think that is going to directly impact Oregon Democrats, not because plants are moving here, but because plants aren't moving here. Because if you're, you know, from the outside and you've got a new business idea, whatever it is, and you need a new plant and manufacturing facility, where are you going to go? Are you going to head to heavily expensive, heavily taxed, heavily regulated Oregon, or are you going to look at a red state? And I think that's going to impact the Democrats' fortune in 2026 as well, because there will be a lot of Oregonians looking across the state lines at what is happening in those other states where they have a better governance and not so many Democrats. And so I think that's going to impact Democrats here as well. What are your thoughts?
Well, I think it probably will. There's been an exodus of people out of the state just because of the horrible policies of Kate Brown and now Governor Kotek. And I don't see anything with them getting any better. The fact that she finally canned this huge monstrosity transportation bill and has taken it off the table is just a stark admission by her that what she was doing from the yes. beginning is wrong. But I don't know. There's a lot of people I think are still very leery of the fact that she's really going to correct her ways, that this is just another maneuver to somehow come back at a later time with a lot yes. of the same nonsense.
Yeah, I think that's it more than anything is, and in case if people aren't aware, the signature bill, Kotek's signature bill, the gas tax bill, we had 250,000 Oregonians sign the referendum to get that pulled. Now, she is asking Democrats to repeal her own bill, the one Democrats helped her pass, despite 95% written opposition to it. And what you said there, that's the speculation, is it's not that she doesn't want to tax people, it's that she's going to wait until after the election, and she doesn't want that no gas tax referendum on the ballot right next to her name. Which is weird because, you know, if you can't be proud of it, why would you pass it in the first place?
Yeah, well, see, it was all political to help the unions and everybody else that was supporting her election. It's mainly public employee unions and ODOT itself that wanted that money. So that's been a big disappointment to them that they're not going to get it, but it's the way she went about doing it that Oregonians just simply said, we've had enough of this. We can't afford to pay the gas tax hikes that you're proposing and all the other things. It was a monstrosity to begin with and should have never passed, but she did it. And then when the voters turned around and fought back and said, we're bringing this to a vote, she's decided, well, okay, I'm just going to go ahead and kill it because I can see there was so much opposition to it, it's going to hurt my chances on reelection. So, you know, It's all politically motivated, and there's nothing good that's going to come out of it, except for the fact we're not getting the increase right away. But that doesn't mean she's going to try something else again. She always has.
Yeah. Well, and of course, we've also got her big climate protection plan as well, although that was not a bill. That was an executive order anyway. That's also out there, and that will kick in after the election as well. So there's another aspect to ODOT as well, because that was, of course, the purpose of that gas tax bill was to increase funding for ODOT. Well, the Interstate Bridge Report staff said they were telling the legislators there was no updates to the cost on the I-5 bridge budget. However, reporters have now found that that was a lie. So they lied on the record. And the meeting was supposed to inform the legislators, give them some updated information, but they said the update was not, and they had said that there was no update. However, what they have found is not only was the update available, but it had been completed 4 months earlier in August. And it was extremely detailed. And it also showed, and this is the real thing, is it showed that the costs were more than double the $6 billion that Democrats had sold to Oregon legislators to pass that bill in the special session. And so the true cost, according to that update, was actually $13.6 billion. So more than double. And so this is what we're up against, is the Democrats are flat out lying about these things.
Well, and they had to, Mark, when you think about it, because the monstrosity tax bill that she was proposing, the gas tax that she now had to take off the table, imagine what would have happened if they would have disclosed that like they should have And then that gets added on to their, it would have blown their budget up, is the bottom line, in a big sort of way. And there's no way she could have moved forward. It would have paralyzed her. So they choose to lie about it. But the fact that the lying is going on is really criminal. It really is. There's just no excuse for this. You've got to come to the table and you've got to be honest about what you're really proposing to spend and what effect that's going to have on taxpayers. And she didn't want to do that. She maneuvered everything politically to try to make it more palatable to people that had to listen to her nonsense about what this gas tax was going to do, when it wasn't going to do near enough, and it would have costed way more, and the money is being spent, misspent, as Representative Deal has already talked about on your show. They have the money. They already had the money before this monstrosity was tried to shove through, but they chose to not spend it the way that it should have been spent. Instead, they wanted to waste it on this climate change nonsense and all the other things that they had padded in it. And now that it's gone, they've got to come back and deal with that somehow. But that ODOT, the true cost of that bridge would have absolutely derailed and blown up their budget.
And the thing is, that's one project. If we're seeing that kind of level of fraud and misrepresentation and flat-out lies on one project, we know what's happening in other ones. Well, I do think that the Democrats are going to be facing an uphill battle. I think they're going to be so busy defending the fraud that is being exposed, they're not going to be able to respond politically. They're going to be knocked back on defense. But I do think that they will fight like their lives and livelihood depend on it, because it will. However, I think what you're going to see is a lot of very desperate moves by the Democrats. They're going to fight like a cornered wild animal. So unfortunately, Chuck, we are up against the clock. We look forward to having you back on in the sometime near future.
Well, I'll be glad to help, Mark. Thanks very much.
You know, it would be nice if the staff from ODOT that lied to the legislature were held liable. Maybe start by firing them. But because Democrats control everything in this state, including the Attorney General and the Governor and both House and Senate, it would require Democrats to hold Democrats responsible, and that's just not going to happen. Which, in a weird way, is too bad for them, because holding someone accountable is a good way to rebuild trust. But who needs to build bridges or build trust when you can just defraud the government of billions of dollars? Last week, Democrats were defending drug trafficker Maduro. This week, Governor Kotek and Democrats leaped to defend gang member sex traffickers who got themselves shot by Border Patrol in Portland. Can't wait to see who they defend next week. As I said, 2026 is going to be a very interesting year. You better pay attention, because as we say every week, the best information is no good if you don't use it. Reagan, what do you think?
I do not believe in a fate that will fall on us no matter what we do. I do believe in a fate that will fall on us if we do nothing.
It's more than a show. It's self-defense. The I Spy Radio Show.